do it. So may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Amen.
So if we were at the 9:15 service, I would say Teddy Landon, who's in fourth grade, and Adelaide Blocher, who's in fifth grade, could be part of my cohort. And if we were at the 11 o'clock service, I would say our wonderful choir member, Ann Akers, would be part of my cohort. And that is the cohort of people who are born around Christmas, plus or minus, you know, a week. So Teddy Landon has the blessing of being born on Christmas Eve. Adelaide, I think, is the 27th, and Anne is in the week. Mine is New Year's Eve. And as you may know, there is a sort of misfortune that befalls people who happen to be born at Christmas time, and I call it gift doubling. So this is a phenomenon wherein the birthday boy or birthday girl receives one gift for both special days. I saw a cartoon recently. It showed the wise men approaching the baby Jesus with their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and they were kneeling down in reverence to the newborn king, and one of the wise men said, "To be clear, Jesus, this is for your birthday and for Christmas." So, yes, this is a thing that is truly happens to us, but what is also true is that there are people like my parents, I'm very lucky, who went above and beyond and who go above and beyond to acknowledge the specialness of a birthday, even when it happens to fall back to back with Christmas. And there are people who lovingly attend to both special days. And those people, in my experience, who acknowledge both special days for what they are tend to be really good gift givers as well. They are people who are invested in finding just the right thing that will bring you a sense of joy or a sense of delight. And for me, this year, my wife gave me a copy of a book by one of my favorite poets that has just been released and is impossible to find. I had been searching for it for weeks, and she didn't know I was searching, but she somehow managed to contact our friend who owns an independent bookstore, who contacted his friend who owns an independent bookstore in Chicago, who sent the book, and it arrived just in time for my birthday. So that was really special. And this gift giving, this special gift giving, it's not only a gift to the recipient, but it's a gift to the giver as well, because it allows us that opportunity to really pay attention to another person, to really kind of meditate on what it is that might bring them that sense of joy and delight that I spoke about. It also, when we give a gift that's really meaningful, or when we receive a gift that's really meaningful, it has this capacity to form these intimate bonds between us, and that's a really lovely thing. So I've been spending the week thinking a lot about, in preparation for the Feast of the Epiphany, about the gifts that were brought by the wise men to Jesus at his birth. And in the gospel, we hear that three gifts were presented to Jesus: the gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And I couldn't find any concrete proof of what those gifts were set to symbolize. But if we can use a little bit of imagination, we might think that gold, this, you know, precious, precious gold, might be a marker of his royalty, might be a marker of his kingship and his kinship with all people. Frankincense, a type of incense used in religious rituals for centuries before Jesus's birth, you know, might point us in the direction of something of his divinity. And myrrh, this sort of sticky substance that could be used for embalming, perhaps a dramatic foreshadowing of the kind of life that Jesus would live and also of the kind of death that Jesus would die. Or so this was part of the imagination of the hymn writer John Henry Hopkins, who wrote We Three Kings. He writes a verse about each of those gifts. He says, "Myrrh is mine, its bitter perfume breathes a life of gathering gloom, sorrowing, sighing, bleeding, dying, sealed in the stone-cold tomb." So that's not like the cheery Christmas vibe that we often get, and it's a verse that is sometimes left out, but at any rate, I'm not by no means the first to imagine what these gifts might mean. So Matthew's gospel that we heard this morning, which is the only to recount this story of the wise men, as I said, we don't get this kind of proof of what these gifts were all about, but what we do know is that they were costly and that they were precious and that they had been selected with care, that kind of gift giving where it's not just like, hey, I got you the latest trend or this pair of socks that was on clearance. I picked this out because it is meaningful to me, and I think it will be meaningful to you. And what's also clear from the gospel text is that the wise men undertook a rather perilous journey to arrive in Bethlehem. That Herod was threatened by the attention being paid to Jesus tells us something about the sort of political and social power that Jesus had already at his birth. The political and social power, not of a ruler that would strong-arm people into submission, but that of a leader who would make love manifest in humility. He would embody a humility that would stop the forces of violence, tyranny, and oppression in their tracks. Scholar Audrey West puts a finer point on this, writing, quote, "The birth of God's Messiah is a sign to the world for healing and for life, not for terror or for death." Additionally, these wise men seem to represent a sort of knowledge that isn't necessarily obvious, but that perhaps was somewhat obscured. Again, quoting scholar Audrey West, she writes, "Whoever the Magi were, their presence in Bethlehem is suggestive. In Matthew's counts, it is these learned stargazers who study the signs in the sky, dreamers who risk an arduous journey from afar, foreigners who find their way to the Christ child." Her take on the identities of the wise men is, for me, somewhat akin to how I picture some of the unsung heroes of our own time. You know, she doesn't call them prophets necessarily, but she says they are people who gaze at the stars to gain wisdom about reality. And there are many people in our own time and place who turn to ancient wisdom to bring a sense of peace and harmony to our modern world. There are people in our own time, here and now, who risk persecution to remind us that we ought to turn back to basics and to a fundamental respect for and harmonious living with all of God's creation. So there's one voice that stands out for me, a wise voice, and that's, some of you may know her. She's an indigenous scientist named Robin Wall Kimmerer. She wrote the book Braiding Sweetgrass. And in that book, she writes about just the sort of knowledge that I think the wise men embodied. Because the knowledge that she talks about as an indigenous scientist is the sort of knowledge that isn't found in books, research, or even in traditional scientific methods. Something deeper, something more profound than what the eye can see. And the theme, as I was thinking this week about gifts, I recall that that is a theme that she works with a lot in Braiding Sweetgrass, this text. And she emphasizes over and over again about the way that gifts can shape us and about the responsibility and reciprocity of gift giving. She invites the reader to imagine, for example, and I thought this was such a sweet and profound image. She says, think of a strawberry. If you think of a strawberry as a commodity, what does that do for you or to you? But if someone gives you a single strawberry as a gift, how does that change your perception of what the strawberry is? And in a sense, she kind of ties this to a larger framework wherein all things that God created, from the small strawberry to the, you know, the immense magnitude of the celestial bodies, can be for us a sign of God's gift to us, a sign of God's love for us. She writes in Braiding Sweetgrass, she writes, quote, give thanks for what you have been given and give a gift in reciprocity for what you have taken. Give thanks for what you have been given and give a gift in reciprocity for what you have taken. So as the wise men journey to greet Jesus, gifts in hand, they represent for me this sort of reciprocity. Of course, the wise men knew, I think, and we know that there's no tangible physical gift that we could give to the Christ child that would encompass the magnitude of the gift that he has given to us. For it's his whole life that is an offering and a sacrifice, not only to God, but to us. But nonetheless, the wise men bring the best of what they have. They bring that which is fragrant but fleeting, that which is sweet and is sincere. So as we think of the wise men and their gifts, my question is, how are you called to enter into this reciprocity with Jesus? How can you give of yourself in this season to honor and glorify the kind of love that Jesus represents? And just like those really good gift givers who always pay close attention to know just what will make your heart sing, what might you call forth of yourself? How might you pay attention to bring forth a gift that would bring joy and delight to Jesus? As we ponder these things, I pray that the ancient wisdom of God would guide you as you call forth your own gifts, gifts that will be of service to our world. And as you do this, I pray that you would be blessed in receiving as well, receiving that love which is beyond comprehension and that peace which passes understanding. Amen. Thank you.